I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 206 for the weekend starting 9 February 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, there's a car in space.
Also this week, the multi-choice ANN 7 saga. Criticism streams in on the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill and the rise and rise of NVIDIA.
We're both in Joburg this week at Tech Central HQ. There's a ton to talk about. Let's do it.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. Lots to talk about today. We didn't record last week. My fault, yeah. Because I had some meetings on Friday.
Who does a meeting on a Friday?
No, bad planning. You were sitting on the beach last Friday.
Yes.
In Cape Town. How was your trip to Cape Town?
Sorry, as I'm sipping down my ice cold beer. No, Cape Town was great. The water is obviously a very real issue there. But regardless, you know, tourists are still having fun. The beaches are still packed. Cape Town's as beautiful as ever.
And you've been flying drones around the place, over the airport and...
Yes, I was the guy flying the drone over the airport with my FPV. Did you see that video, by the way?
I did.
Online.
I saw Richard Ferron sharing it.
Actually ridiculous.
The guy who shot the drone up above the aircraft.
Yeah, so that was a racing drone that he basically flew over. That's why he could get those weird top-down angles.
Right.
But yeah, I know, it's absolutely scary. Cape Town's not really the place where you can fly too many drones in too many places.
Yes.
Anywhere around Table Mountain, you can't do it. So.
Oh, really? Not nowhere around there.
People still do it. I saw people on Table Mountain flying drones when I was there.
Okay.
But I'm not the kind of guy that goes and tell them off, you know.
Why is it prohibited from Table Mountain?
It's a national park.
You're not allowed to fly in a national park?
No.
Oh, really?
No national parks, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
So that's, yeah, if you don't know that, that's something to keep in mind, because a lot of places are parks that you don't necessarily know. Like,
yes.
You know, you can hike up Table Mountain, and the hike routes along Table Mountain are parks, part of the park section.
Okay.
So yeah,
well, that's a real pity, because a national park is a perfect place to fly a drone, of course.
No, definitely. Look, I mean, I'm sure regulation will change in a few years, where it says maybe within 10 meters of you, not higher than 5 meters or something. You know, to make way for these consumer guys that want to launch from their palm. You know, it's just a selfie stick in essence. But yeah, you have to be very careful. I wouldn't want to fly in anywhere close to Table Mountain.
Yeah. Anyway, before we get into the news, let's do our quiz. Do you want to kick it off this week?
Certainly. The first question in this week's quiz. The metal plates that protect the batteries in Tesla's electric cars are made in which city?
You'll never guess the answer.
I didn't know that.
The second question. What song was playing in the Tesla Roadster that Elon Musk blasted into space?
Third question. SpaceX Falcon Heavy rocket will likely be superseded by an even more powerful rocket. What is that rocket called?
Who this week likened cryptocurrencies to Ponzi schemes?
And the last question, how much is MTN reportedly hoping to raise through a listing in Nigeria this year?
As always, we'll get to the quiz results at the end of the show, but so much to talk about, Richard. Of course, we're going to start with...
We have to.
We're going to start with Elon Musk and his rocket and his Tesla Roadster now winging its way towards the orbit of Mars or somewhere around there. I think he missed his trajectory.
Slightly overshot the mark, yeah. You'll end up in an asteroid field from what I believe.
Did you watch it live?
No, I didn't watch it live. I watched it after the fact. It was still spectacular, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I sat up that night. The launch was delayed because there was wind shear in the upper atmosphere. So it was delayed by about 2 hours. I think they launched just before 11 o'clock South African time. And I was exhausted. I could hardly keep my eyes open. But I waited up. And it was worth every second, I must say. Absolutely worth every second. Watching that thing go up, you know, after Elon Musk had said that there was a 50% chance this thing was going to blow up on the launch pad, just seeing it go up and then, I don't know about you, but I got goose flesh when the payload doors opened.
Those doors open, you see the red
sports car with the "Don't Panic" written on the screen. And I didn't really
goosebumps now just thinking about it.
No, it was wonderful. And then of course the David Bowie song. I won't say which one because it's in our quiz, but what a fantastic achievement.
I mean, it's funny that something I guess it's not simple, but something as seemingly simple as a space rocket launching into space. We don't see it as often, like the hype isn't there as much as what it used to until Spaces came along. And that's what makes me excited about space travel again. The fact that it's not just about a NASA program, but there's more stuff that can be done, more payloads, more things to be put into. And then obviously putting a car into space with a dummy.
I mean, it was a brilliant.
Based on that spacesuit that they've developed.
It was a brilliant marketing.
It was fantastic.
Brilliant marketing. And then, of course, the two, the left and right boosters, I'm not sure what they called them, but the coming back down to Earth and landing next to each other, within a few meters of each other.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Oh, you missed that part of the video.
I missed that part, yeah.
Oh, that was the highlight. That was arguably the highlight of the video, was the two cores coming down and landing right next to each other, reusable cores.
And that's just a feat of their amazing engineering to get them to land.
I mean, that's the thing that SpaceX has its IP. That's what it's done so successfully to bring down the cost of launching vehicles into space. The reusability of it, and the center core crashed. It was meant to land on a barge, but slammed into the ocean at 500 kilometers an hour. But Elon Musk said in the press conference afterwards that was the part they were least interested in recovering. It was apparently the two I forgot what they're called, boosters or whatever they're called. Those were returned safely, and those apparently were quite expensive components. The reusability of those is very important. But seeing them land next to each other within a matter of seconds of each other coming down. And
that's phenomenal.
Oh, man, it was, it was unreal. Unreal.
It's an incredible feat of human engineering and what we as a species are capable of. You know, I was listening to the audiobook on my road trip down We Are Legion, We Are Bob. I was listening to the second book.
Oh, yes.
And it's very much about AI in the cosmos. And when I was looking at the launch and after the live event, now I couldn't help think, you know, this is the start of that thing for the human race. You know, the start of us putting more things into the universe, into the cosmos, with potential messages. I mean, we've done it before, but real tangible hardware that we can put in, giving us video feeds and audio feeds and these things back. I mean, we're living in the future. It's just a matter of getting far enough now, potentially getting people out far enough, and then getting some communication out there.
Yes. I loved the... I never knew that Elon Musk was such a huge fan of Douglas Adams. But, of course, anyone who hasn't read Douglas Adams, and I suspect most people listening to this podcast have read his books. But, of course, the Don't Panic on the car screen is a direct reference from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And what a lot of people don't know is that also on board the car in the glove compartment was a copy, a hardback copy of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and a towel.
Fantastic.
Of course, the towel is integral to the whole Hitchhiker story. so I loved that. I mean, I love the showmanship of it. It's such a pity Douglas Adams died a few years ago, because I'm sure he would have been absolutely delighted.
Imagine how you would feel doing something like that.
Yes.
But I think that was a tip of the hat. And I guess this is the ultimate geekery, you know.
Yeah.
It's the culmination of the ultimate geekery.
Yeah, indeed. And he no doubt obviously grew up reading Douglas Adams, as so many of us did.
So many of us did, yeah.
And inspired by him. I mean, those books, they were silly, but they were also profound at the same time. They sparked the imagination. They were funny. They were meant to be humor, but there was also something deeper about them.
Oh, it was an exploration of the mind for me. You know, it was imagining these things are possible, which again, why We Are Legion, We Are Bob, the book series is so one of my favorites, because it takes me there again. Not many books have been able to do that. You know, really make me think about technology in a real world scenario.
Yeah,
you know, with a bit of potential future prospects thrown in, like what if? It's very exciting.
Yeah, I must read those two books. I've only read the first one, and
I'd actually
forgotten about them. Yeah, there's three. It's a trilogy. The third one finishes it up, apparently. Great books if you haven't read them. The Bobbyverse.
The Bobbyverse.
Yeah, very good books. So that was just incredible what Elon Musk achieved, and those visuals from space with the Earth behind, the blue planet behind,
and the roadster in front,
the roadster, yeah. And the astronaut in inverted commas.
I did read a very funny tweet. Somebody said, "Did Elon Musk just perform the perfect murder?" And then the sub comment was, "Did anybody see the Stig recently?"
The other one I saw was, what happens when you don't ask for directions?
Yes, there was another one with the, your Uber is outside. Your Uber is waiting outside.
Very good, very good.
But yeah, no, and apparently that vehicle, I mean, it's going to go through some hell before it, you know, gets much further out of our orbit. Because of the gamma rays hitting it, you know, just the harshness of space. It'll be interesting to see what this vehicle is going to look like in a few weeks, few days even.
Yeah, I wonder if someone's going to recover at some point in hundreds of years' time.
Yes, fact, there will be the aliens who will intercept it, yes, yeah. And find us, us.
They say it's going to be on a decaying orbit, so in a million years or so it's going to plummet into the sun. But that's still a lot of time to be up there for someone to find
it. That's a hell of a long time.
Yeah. Wow. The suggestion that, 10,000 years from now, human beings might find it and say, what the hell were our ancestors doing?
Well, that to me was the most fascinating part of this. Yeah, imagine. I mean, you don't know how this thing's going to end up. And somebody must find it, most likely. Somebody might come stumble across it one day.
Yes.
Oh, it's going to be. I hope you put some more hidden things in the vehicle that you didn't know of. That
well, there was the Foundation series from
Yes, that was in, yeah.
That's on a disc, a little, tiny little...
On a laser disc that apparently lasts for billion years or million years or something.
Okay. Yeah, there were all sorts of little...
I wonder what's in the boot,
Easter
in the
eggs.
Trunk of the car. Maybe a weekend pack, clothes or something like that.
Hopefully Jacob Zuma.
Oh, we missed a launch for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the screenshots, the photographs, the wallpapers that's come from this. I mean, it's the blue planet all over again. It's that awe-inspiring moment captured on digital film.
I was actually thinking if I could get a very high-quality picture of that photo of the car with the Earth behind it.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually get that framed and put on the wall. It'd make a fantastic poster.
I'm sure there will be a high-res render coming out from SpaceX. I mean, these guys love sharing their visuals.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll see it.
I'm sure we will. I must get one printed and laminated. Put it on the office wall.
Oh, yeah. Write it off as a business expense.
Exactly. Good thinking. So this isn't the last of Falcon Heavy. It's while the tech, as he drops his pen, as the technology, the technology is going to be superseded by newer rockets, which SpaceX is already working on. But they're going to be doing more launches with Falcon Heavy. Obviously, the commercial advantage of this is that they can put up much bigger payloads than they could with the Falcon 9 rockets. The Falcon Heavy is essentially three Falcon 9 strapped together. Mm. There's more to it than that, but that's the basic of it.
Simplified version, it's about right.
Yeah. And with the reusability, the idea is they can launch payloads that are much larger and also potentially use this to go to the moon and potentially even use it for Mars, although I think that the future rockets like the one in our quiz, which I'm not going to give the answer to because I always give away the answers while I'm talking in the news. But I think that, certainly there's huge potential here to do things that haven't been done before.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think for me, the primary objective here is just to put any of the flat earthers to bay. The Earth isn't flat, guys.
Do they still exist?
Yeah, there's recently been an upsurge in comments around that. But yes, I agree with you. I mean, imagine what we can do when space travel becomes as easy as taking a plane ride. I'm not saying intergalactic space travel. I'm saying just getting into orbit.
Yes.
Imagine just being able to, for a joyride, going up there for a few minutes and having a little float around space like the Virgin Galactic guys have done.
Mm.
I mean, that is an incredible level of achievement and just something for people to experience. I mean, how many people have been into space? Like a few hundred, I guess, or a handful, a few dozen. I don't know the number, but
probably a few hundred. I'm guessing though.
And imagine what will be possible once we'll be able to do this on a more regular level, or more. It's more easily achievable.
Hey, darling, you feel like a weekend on the moon?
on the moon. Well, I'm also thinking. Imagine getting a drone one day that you can shoot up into space and take some images of the moon. I mean, you know, these things aren't impossible. It's just a matter of getting the right technology in small enough capacities, and we can really achieve anything.
Yes. Yeah, I'm just imagining what would be needed to put a drone into space from your backyard. You probably wouldn't have a backyard left after you've launched it.
But well, you can launch a balloon into space very easily with a GoPro on it.
Oh, that's true. Weather balloons.
Yeah,
weather balloons. That doesn't actually go into space.
Well, into the stratosphere.
But it goes into the very high atmosphere.
Yeah. I mean, you can still see the curvature. But yeah, you're right. I mean, then from there, just having something that takes it, electronically takes it further. I'm sure it's not going to be commercially available. We might have some issues with, the aviation authorities.
Yes, I think they might have a problem with that. If we've got a problem with you putting a drone over Table Mountain, I think they might have a major problem with shooting a drone into space.
But I don't think there's any massive, I don't think there's any big legislation anywhere in the world that prohibits anybody from putting stuff into space. Is there? I can launch a balloon. Now, obviously, you need to be aware of the aviation rules for the in that space where airplanes fly. But I think anybody can push something up there.
Yeah, not of the scale of a Falcon Heavy, though.
No, I mean that's budget prohibitive.
Yeah, that also requires huge permissions from all sorts of authorities, I would imagine. I'm sure they had to shut down some commercial air traffic over Florida while they were doing it.
Oh, probably just reroute it.
Yeah. But well done, Elon Musk. It was I think I tweeted a picture of the car with the Earth in the background and said, this will surely be one of the iconic images of the 21st century.
I totally agree. Yes, 100%. And that's why we need to get it mounted on our wall.
Yeah, we'll do that. Let's keep an eye out. I'm sure it'll be on the. I think you're right. It'll be on the SpaceX website before too long. Hopefully in an 8K format or something.
I've got some. There are some already on Reddit. There's some high res wallpapers of the launch. I haven't seen any of the car in space, but I've definitely seen of the launch and of the rocket and stuff on the way up. So there must be some stuff on the way.
Yeah.
Some geeks will extract it.
Remind me to show you the synchronized landing of the
boosters. Yes, definitely.
Before you leave here today. But that was the launch. And if you've missed it, by the way, and I'd imagine there'd be very few people listening to this podcast who haven't missed it. But if you have missed it, go and look at it. Go watch the video. It's a half an hour and it'll blow your mind. So let's move on to more earthly things. How was that for a segue?
Nice segue there.
The MultiChoice and ANN7 is a very interesting story.
Yeah.
This happened last week, but we didn't record last Friday. I went to a press conference at MultiChoice, half the political journalists in the country were there. It was a very interesting, session with some hard questions asked. But the short of it, in case you missed it, is that MultiChoice is ditching ANN7 off its platform as of August when the contract expires. They're citing reputational risk associated with it, and they're also saying that the channel was not generating the viewership that it needed to be successful. Of course, this whole thing is very controversial, and I recorded a podcast with Calvin Mawela, who's the CEO of MultiChoice South Africa, late last week. If you haven't heard it, go and have a listen to him. I did give the guy a hard time. asked him some very tough questions about this deal and why ANN7 is the one that's getting bulleted if MultiChoice was the one that made the mistakes, as they said. Asked him some tough questions, and I recommend going to have a listen to that podcast. It's one of the better ones I think we've done here on Tech Central. The short of it is that ANN7, whether rightly or wrongly, is getting dumped off DSTV. That'll probably be the end of ANN7. I see Jimmy Manye, Mzuanele Manye, on Twitter this morning saying that, they've got all sorts of, it's a solid organization, they're going to carry on, waddy, 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 but I can't see it happening.
If you don't have a platform, you can't.
You don't have a platform, you can't do it. I mean, you could carry on streaming on YouTube like they do at the moment, but you're not going to make the sort of revenues you need to
run. What are the viewership like on those numbers? I think they are in the sub-hundreds. No, I'm being serious. I've seen a few of those. They're tiny.
I tune in occasionally to see the Gupta view of things. It's lucky if I see 60 or 70 people watching it simultaneously on YouTube. So, I personally, I'm not going to miss ANN7. I think the channel was a joke. It was started by the Guptas. It's now nominally owned by Mzuanele Manye. And it has consistently run news that's either made up or has a propaganda type slant to it.
Yeah.
It was very clear that they were supporting a particular faction in the ANC in the election at the end of last year, and some of the stories they've run have been highly questionable. Some people are saying it's wrong for DStv to pull ANN7 off the air, because what about a, you know, the multitude of voices in the media space that you require? But I think I agree with Anton Harbour and with Max Dupreer, who both said, we can cry about losing a voice in the media space, but do we really cry about ANN7? I mean, if you look at this thing and why it was created and what it's done and all that sort of thing, are we really losing a voice, or are we losing a propaganda channel?
Good question. That is the question that you should ask.
And I agree with them. We shouldn't cry over the end of this channel. Mm. Now, MultiChoice has said that they're going to license a new news channel on DStv. It'll be black owned, and it will, I think they've made it quite clear up front that they expect this thing to be impartial and to report the news fairly. But so there's a new channel coming, and they've asked people to express interest in participating in that. I don't know if Mr. Money is going to be one of the bidders, because I suspect that he won't be getting the license even if he does bid. So new channel ANN7 off the air from August. I suspect I'll be watching the final broadcast.
Final hours.
Yeah. Just to see them rail against everyone. White Monopoly Capital and MultiChoice. And
I think it's also fitting to just take a minute and reflect on the humorous and fun times we've had when the channel launched. Do you remember all the funny things that came out of that?
Yeah, the gaffes. Yes.
The gaffes, yeah, and the unfortunate bloopers. And
It was so funny. It was a joke.
Yeah.
They have improved a lot since then.
From humble beginnings, I guess.
Very, very humble. I forget some of the details, but it was terrible.
Technically, they may have improved, but unfortunately, content.
The content is still a little on the dodgy side, yeah. So, ANN7, I'm certainly not going to be missing it. Anyway, we need to take an ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Well, welcome back to the podcast. How's it, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan?
Electronic Communications Amendment Bill. I've taken to calling it ECAB, not to be confused.
So it's not like an Uber competitor.
That's right. Don't mix it up with Uber or Taxify. So the deadline for submissions on this bill was the end of January, and I've started going through some of these, and some severe criticism of it, MTNs in particular. MTN, they had a good analogy, actually. They said, talking about the creation of the Wholesale Open Access Network, or WOAN, which we've spoken about a lot on this podcast. In effect, they're saying what's going to happen if government gets its way here is that we're going to have a new infrastructure monopoly in South Africa. And what's happening here is that the government's hoping, in effect, to create a single national bread bakery. And is then hoping that the quality of bread and the price of bread is going to improve because the supermarkets are competing with each other to sell that bread when there's one monopoly provider of bread. I thought it was such a good analogy.
Very good.
It's the same thing here in this in the telecoms market. If the bill is implemented into law, we're going to go back to the days of a monopoly in the telecommunications industry, which cannot be a good thing.
No, I agree.
There's obviously a lot more detail to it and a lot more complexity around it. But the hearings are going to be held, or the public discussion around this is going to be held in early March. The DTPS, Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, will be having a, I'm not sure what you call it, a colloquium or Bosparat, or where the industry is going to be thrashing this out. But it's clear that certainly reading the MTN submission, and I'm sure the Vodacom submission is going to be very similar to MTN's, reading the Free Market Foundation submission, reading the submission from the, from Research ICT Africa, and from other organizations, it's very clear that there's a very strong pushback against what government's proposing here. Warnings that the attempt, or the suggested attempt, that government's going to try and take back the spectrum that the operators have already been given, that that, that would be it would run counter to the constitution because it would be in breach of the property rights of these organizations. The very strong inference here is that if that is contained in the final act, that this whole thing is going to go to court and will go all the way to the Constitutional Court, and I'm willing to bet that the operators will win. But there are other problems with the bill as well. There's some positive aspects to it, but there's some serious problems with it. The funny thing is, I think a WOAN might work. The problem with the bill is that the government wants to give the WOAN too much power. It wants to give the WOAN an effective monopoly. The WOAN makes sense, if you think about it, for smaller operators just to come in and start to compete against the bigger guys, in that your ISPs, for example, they just can't all individually get spectrum because there isn't enough spectrum. They could club together. Also, they don't have the capital to build national networks. But if they all club their capital together, there's the potential that they could create another national network.
The community service of networks.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think there's a place for it. And I think if it can be made to work, then that's great. But it must be done at the exclusion of the model that's worked so far, which is big companies like Vodacom, MTN, Cell C, and Telkom rolling out infrastructure and competing on that infrastructure. Now, under the government's proposal, there will be no effective competition in infrastructure, so there'll be no innovation. A single company isn't going to innovate. It's just the nature of things. Exactly. But right now, MTN and Vodacom particularly are competing head-on to have the fastest network in South Africa. They're neck and neck at the moment in terms of having the most robust mobile broadband platform. Now, if Vodacom was the only company in South Africa providing a network, do you think that we'd be pushing 50 or 60 megabit per second in some suburbs in South Africa over mobile broadband? No, we wouldn't, because they wouldn't be investing in the network, because they wouldn't need to, because they didn't have any competition. And I worry that we're going to see exactly the same thing in the market if this WOAN is given a monopoly over spectrum, or is even given too much spectrum. It must get the same amount of spectrum as another operator. So if Vodacom gets 20 megahertz of spectrum, I don't think the WOAN should get more than 20 megahertz of spectrum. I think this bill is a disaster. And MTN is clearly of the same view, reading through their 68-page submission. Waiting to read some of the other operator submissions. I haven't seen Cell C's yet. They seem a bit reluctant to share theirs. I'm not sure why. Certainly the most of the submissions I've read have been very much against it. The exception was Telkom. Telkom has said, give all of the spectrum to the WOAN, and we think this is a fantastic idea.
But Telkom are also the closest to government.
They are the closest to government, so they've probably felt some pressure there. They're 40% owned by the government. They have the letters SOC after their name, which stands for state-owned company. So there's undoubtedly been some pressure on Telkom to adopt the government position. Also, Telkom, I think, is arguing its own game here, because Telkom is the smallest mobile operator in the country. And it simply doesn't have the capex to be able to compete head-on with MTN and Vodacom. And they'd like a network, national network, to be built, funded by MTN and Vodacom, in which they can partake, where they can use the network to roll out services to consumers. So I think Telkom's also arguing a very narrow sort of point here. They kind of say, well, let's stick it to MTN and Vodacom because, you know, they're much bigger than us and we don't have the capex to compete. So let's create this model and this will work for us. But, ultimately, I think it might blow up in Telkom's face. I had to have a laugh when reading through Telkom's submission as well, where they said that this makes absolute sense, open access makes absolute sense, we should have open access to all the mobile operators' networks. But, this mustn't happen in the fixed line space, by the way, because there is sufficient competition there. I had to laugh when I read that. These operators always argue their own positions.
Or their own agenda.
Their own agendas.
I guess you always have to ask, where does the money go? Follow the money and you'll figure out, do you benefit ultimately from something like this? Not always. The end user, not the consumer, not South Africa.
Yeah, who's going to own? That's the next big discussion that's obviously going to happen. If this Warren goes ahead, who's going to own it and why?
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll have to see what the shareholders.
In some ways, it's our own net neutrality battle. I mean, if you've been following what's happening in the States now with net neutrality being pushed through after we all thought it wasn't going to be a thing, you know.
Well, now it's been scrapped.
Now it's been scrapped. But everybody's, I guess, what I'm trying to say is everybody's going after the thing that nobody really thought about many years ago, like that pipe, the connection between the person and the data and the internet and that service provider.
Yeah.
Everybody's just now, it's like a land grab. Everybody just wants to get hold of this, the tech and the IP and the tech, and the spectrum.
And this open access principles, in theory, it sounds nice. At its heart, though, it's a socialist policy. I think if companies want to offer open access, they should be free to be able to do that. I mean, if you look at what Vumatel does, providing access to its infrastructure, maybe that's not true open access, but it's kind of like a wholesale open access type model. But they did that because it made business sense for them to do that. When you come in and you say to Vodacom, you have to open up your infrastructure to MTN, to the WOAN, to the ISP down the road, because we say you are a dominant operator and therefore you have to make your infrastructure available to other competitors in the market, that sounds horribly to me like expropriation.
Oh, yeah.
And that's socialism, or worse. This is a company that's invested tens of billions of rand building its position in the market. It's the biggest operator in the country. It got there. Sure, it had a favored dispensation when it was launched because there were only two operators launched, MTN and Vodacom. They were launched at the same time. Vodacom is the biggest operator in the country. How did it get there? Because it made the right decisions relative to its competitor. So the question is, do you come in now and you say, well, let's give any licensed operator access to your infrastructure because you've been successful?
It doesn't make sense. I mean, there's a lot of analogies you can pull on this to say, how can anybody build a business and then expect another third party coming in taking over the logistics of that business without any reason or rhyme, you know? Yeah, it's...
And if you decide as a government or a regulator that the market isn't competitive enough, then you use other instruments.
Yeah.
You issue more licenses. You create a WOAN, not a monopoly WOAN, you create a WOAN, or there are other tools you can use to do this sort of thing. Forcing the operators to open the infrastructure doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. It runs counter to everything I believe in.
Yes. No, 100%. But somebody's got something to benefit, and that unfortunately is why we're sitting with this type of thing.
Yeah. I also have a contrary view to, I think, the majority view on net neutrality, by the way. I think net neutrality is a spectacular mistake.
Yes.
I think on paper, if you don't analyze it, it looks great. Well, here's a great big operator that won't let me watch my Netflix at the speed I want to watch it. Implement net neutrality rules on it. No. In a competitive market, the operator should be allowed to determine the speed of the services it provides to you as a customer. And you as the customer should be free to engage with that operator, knowing that that's how it's going to shape my traffic or do whatever it does on the network, to be able to offer me with a differentiated service at a certain price point. If the service provider isn't going to provide me with, who's going to throttle my Netflix and I want to watch Netflix, then I'll say, well, cheers, I'm going to another operator that offers me that. Now, in a competitive market, which is what we should be striving towards, that won't be a problem. And you won't need net neutrality rules or any of these other regulations force things that they're trying to force on the operators. So I was actually quite glad when I saw the Donald Trump administration pulling the plug on net neutrality. I kind of said, well done, guy. It's one of the first smart things you've done. But I'm sure there are lots of listeners who disagree with me on network neutrality.
I'm going to sit on the fence right now.
You can send your flame mail to info@techcentral.co.za. The last bit of news, and I don't know if you've been watching their share price this week, Rechard, or just watching the share price over the last month, is NVIDIA, the big graphics card company. As of last night, when they issued their latest quarterly results, they are now worth more than IBM.
Well, that's incredible. That is ridiculous.
If the market opens as expected, according to pre-market trading, they're going to have a market cap north of $150 billion. IBM sitting on about $135 billion. So bigger than IBM, one of the stalwarts, the behemoths of the IT industry. I think it shows two things. It shows just how well NVIDIA's done, and it shows you how badly IBM has done in the last few years.
And also, I guess it does go to show where the industry is heading. I mean, computing we've got down. We got the CPUs down, the computers, all the stuff that makes up a good computing experience is down. The next level, the next challenge we're getting into that we've often spoken about is the graphics side. So augmented reality, virtual reality, gaming, you just need better graphics. All of these beautiful things require not a necessarily faster computer, but a faster graphics processor. So we're now in the era of, it's not just computing power. You have to have this alternative thing, this extra thing that pushes the quality of the AR and the VR. And obviously Bitcoin is now part of it because you can process so many things on one chip, which a CPU can't do. I love seeing it. I love seeing the way that things are shifting away from, shifting in tech,
yes,
as opposed to just staying static and saying, okay, CPU, memory, hard drive, this is what it's about.
Yeah. Obviously, the huge demand for computer graphics by gamers is one of the things that's driven NVIDIA share price.
That's always been like the base reason why they've been.
Of course, the other big reason is crypto mining.
Yeah.
Graphics cards are in huge demand for crypto mining, and NVIDIA can't make them fast enough. They actually just don't have stock. Try and buy a graphics card in this town at the moment. It's impossible. Of course, other things are automotive tech. They're working heavily on automotive technology around self-driving cars. They're selling a lot of their GPUs into data centers, and artificial intelligence is a big growth area for NVIDIA as well. Incredibly successful company. I wouldn't be surprised if by this time next year they're worth more than Intel.
Yeah, that's a good prediction actually.
Yeah, they're not far behind. I think Intel's market cap is about 220, 230 billion. They're sitting on 150, 160 billion now. So it's not that far to go. And if they continue with the sort of growth that they've been delivering, and there's certainly no evidence that there's any slowdown in demand for their GPUs, barring a catastrophe in the cryptocurrency market, there's certainly going to be no slowdown in demand from gamers and from data centers. So I think NVIDIA is just going to keep rising. I mean, it's already in a very, very expensive stock. I think it's trading on a 50 times or 55 times price earnings multiple. But still, if it can maintain the sort of growth that it delivered in its quarterly earnings yesterday, then maybe that sort of price earnings multiple is justified, and maybe the share price can keep growing.
I'd be interested to see if NVIDIA now takes this position of theirs, understanding their technology the way they do, and really innovating in the space of computers and saying, okay, guys, here's some other stuff that we can present to you that'll completely change the way you look at your computer. Or maybe just a processor that's just a much more capable processor than the architectures we've seen to date.
Yes.
I think, NVIDIA is one of those, it's like a Tesla-like company or like a Elon Musk-type business, You can never know what, you never know quite know what to expect from these guys, especially in light of current computing, the situation that we're in. Tech is always on the rise. We have access to some incredible technology. Yeah, I would like to see if they change up their graphics processes and bring us some new tech that we can use. Maybe better mobile technology. You know what I'm saying? Maybe better notebook. Processing technology.
There's certainly very interesting stuff going on in that semiconductor market.
Yes.
Different companies doing different things. Qualcomm taking on Intel now in PC processors. Intel trying to, they haven't been very successful, but still trying to push very heavily into the mobile side of things. So there's a lot of overlap happening. And of course, Broadcom is busy in a $121 billion hostile takeover of Qualcomm. That if that happens, it'll be the biggest acquisition in the history of the technology industry. That semiconductor space, which was probably, you could say it was a bit dull for a long time, has suddenly heated up again.
Oh yeah, definitely. Now again, it seems like we're back in that era where the computer components are very exciting. There was a long time where computer components, you kind of moved to notebooks, you didn't worry about the components so much. I'm not talking about gamers, obviously. But it feels like just across the board, we're getting back to the point where, components matter again.
Yeah.
Don't give me an all-in-one solution that just works. I want to be able to pick the fastest and the best and change it out if something new comes out.
Yes. So that's our news this week. There certainly was a lot to talk about. But let's move on to our regular features. Our winner and loser this week is the same person. The winner, obviously, is Elon Musk for his incredible showmanship and the launch of Falcon Heavy last week, which was almost flawless, not quite. And our loser this week is Mr. Elon Musk for the Tesla's latest set of financial results, which were absolutely appalling. The company lost, I think it was $2 billion. So while Mr. Musk is focused on the future and putting rockets into space and eventually people on Mars, his more earthly pursuits are unfortunately not doing that well at the moment.
Well, call it a loss leader, how's that?
Yes. So far, the market doesn't seem to mind because the share price just keeps going up. But at some point, he's going to have to start pushing these cars out faster, especially the Tesla Model 3.
Look, there's certainly no lack of demand for them.
No, the problem is in the manufacturing side. They can't make them fast enough. Same problem NVIDIA has. I suppose it's a nice problem to have.
Good problem, yeah, good business to be in. Yeah, jeez.
And he'll get it right eventually, I think. Mm. But then he's got the rest of the automotive industry is going to be chasing him hard very soon.
Well, I mean, I can only imagine he's going to have to automate so much more. Just let his cars come off the manufacturing line in an automated process, even more advanced than what the current manufacturers are doing. In so doing, overhauling the entire industry, similar to what he's been doing with the batteries. You know, so there's a lot of exciting things happening. Yeah. You know, a lot of churning up of the industry, so to speak.
Yes, indeed, and companies like BMW. What's the company that owns Mercedes Benz?
Mitsubishi. No.
I've forgotten. Anyway, Daimler.
Daimler.
All these companies are going to be charging hard into the electric and autonomous vehicle market in the next few years. So he has a window, I think, but it's going to be a brief one. The future.
And then also, we're going to start talking about now the technology that drives these vehicles for automotive vehicle driving. Mm-hmm. Again, coming in with the graphics cards, processing these things.
Yeah, and that's where the semiconductor companies are chasing hard at the moment, software providers. BlackBerry, of course, is in that space as well. So, exciting times. But I think it's the first time that someone has won both winner and loser of the week. So, well done, Elon.
In a good way, too, not in a totally bad way.
No. Rechad, I don't have a pick this week, so it's all up to you.
Oh, now you are really putting the pressure on me. I was going to go with a pretty boring one, but because it was a pretty significant one to my life, I'll stick with it. Nedbank, I don't know when they launched this app, but they launched a new app called Nedbank Money. And I just came across it because when I went into the branch to increase the limit on my car to withdraw money, it's more expensive to do it in the branch, you know, and the rigmarole of getting it done manually, they just told me, get the app and you can do it on there. So yesterday, for the first time in my life, I installed the Nedbank Money app. And I was very impressed. You can manage your cards, switch them on and off, manage the block them and do everything from this app, set your limits, and then also it's just a nicer, newer app to do banking with as well. So instead of using the old app, which is very old and dated looking, I was quite impressed with the new Nedbank Money app. I mean, it's not a perfect app by any means. I've only been using it for a day, but everything that I've been wanting to do with my bank, like, you know, if I need to switch off a card, being able to do it from an app, setting my limits, and it's just a nice new interface to do banking with. So yeah, kudos to them for the Nedbank Money app. Although I must say, I don't know why I'd never heard of this before.
Okay.
So maybe their marketing
wasn't. So is it separate to their regular app?
It's a new app. From what I understand, it essentially replaces the new app, but the old one's still available. It's still being used because there's certain things.
So you can do all your internet banking on this.
All your internet banking. I can pay. It's got a totally different interface. It's like a new modern app.
Okay.
With some nice graphics, you know, just user interface, usability, scrolling through the people you want to pay, just putting in a number and paying, as opposed to going through three or four levels to get to a beneficiary, to pay the beneficiary. Mm. It's a grown-up Nedbank app.
But I like the ability to switch off your cards. That's quite useful.
Yeah, well, to block it essentially. Yeah, yeah.
So you can't just switch them on and off at demand.
No. So I didn't mean to. It's not a train wall situation where you can.
Right.
Let me just quickly log in and I can just confirm if I'm not wrong. But it was definitely.
That's more for blocking. Okay.
Block card and replace card, replace damaged card. So, but I mean, it's still. If my wallet gets stolen or something, I can just block it.
I'd really love the local banks to offer a solution where you can go into the app and just switch off a card for a period of time.
The technology is out there. Yeah. We did an interview with Tranwell, the guys from Tranwell, and they've got it. It's the banks just, I think the banks don't want to integrate it, either because of legacy systems where it's very difficult to integrate this new technology, or for some other reason they just want to make this, they don't want to make that accessible. But you can do anything. The technology is there, so that allows you to do anything that you can do with your banking app, you know, with a teller or a banker from an app. It's just not available to most of us in South Africa.
Cool. Well, I'll be back with a pick next week. but I think that's our show, Rechot. Apart from our quiz, let me do the first question. The metal plates that protect the batteries in Tesla's electric cars are made in which city? It's a South African city. Pietermaritzburg.
What?
Made by a company called Hulamin.
I've never heard of them, and that is probably the most interesting factoid I've heard this year.
I was amazed when I read that this week, actually.
The second question, what song was playing in the Tesla roadster that Elon blasted into space? If you haven't guessed by now, the answer is David Bowie's Starman, not Space Oddity, as many suggested.
Yeah, he actually said before the launch, sometime before the launch, that they would be playing Space Oddity in the vehicle.
Yeah.
And so many reports said that it was playing Space Oddity, but in fact it was playing Starman by David Bowie.
Which is the best song for the situation.
Yeah, Space Oddity would have been just fine as well, actually.
It would have been fine, but I've got a more of a soft spot for Starman.
Yeah. I've been listening to a bit of Bowie this week again after the launch, and he was such a great artist.
Oh, yeah.
His final album before his death, Black Star, is an absolute masterpiece. I just can't get enough of it.
And apparently he wrote that knowing he was dying.
He did, yeah.
So that was his...
It's a very, very dark album. It's very dark. It's
I must actually listen to it.
Bleak. But it's... if you listen to it knowing that he wrote this when he was dying, it certainly doesn't give me the impression that he was in a happy place when he died.
Sure.
SpaceX's Falcon Heavy rocket will likely be superseded by an even more powerful one. What is that rocket called? BFR, or apparently Big Falcon Rocket, although I have heard Musk referring to something else in interviews.
Yeah, but just something else.
Certainly, this week in interviews, I've seen it referred to as Big Falcon Rocket. So let's leave it there.
Yeah, fill in the blanks. Fourth question. Who this week likened cryptocurrencies to Ponzi schemes? And the answer there is the World Bank Group President Jim Yong Kim.
And how much is MTN reportedly hoping to raise through a listing in Nigeria this year? And the answer there, $500 million, or about 6 billion rand. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. We'd love to hear from you, and we do read all your emails. From Rechot and myself, until next time. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.